Welcome to the very, very first episode of the Autumn Windbags. We're so excited to get started. We got a great show for you today talking about the Raiders' thrilling and amazing come-from-behind victory against the lowly Jets. We'll break down what's happening with the Indianapolis Colts coming up with their big game and take a look at the playoff picture as well. This episode of the Autumn Windbags is brought to you by The Fight Exchange. Go to thefightexchange.com for all of your gear and mixed martial arts and martial arts. Fight Exchange, invest in your fight. Here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, and Rory Parsons. All right, episode one of the Autumn Windbags. I've been dreaming of this forever. This is perfect coming off of a Jets win in just amazing fashion. This is kind of like when high school teams book their homecoming game against the worst possible opponent just so they look good. That's kind of what we did. I'm RJ, he's Juan, he's Rory, and this is episode one, boys. So let's get right into it. The Raiders pulled it off against the winless Jets in it's funny because when they played the Chiefs, it was like, well, we lost, but it felt like a win. This was a win that felt like a loss because it took a last second 44-yard touchdown pass, Carter Ruggs, to pull this off in the last 5 seconds. 31-28, Raiders beat the New York Jets on the road. I got to admit, at least it was an exciting game.
You know, that was it. I mean, for me, I'm not happy. I'm not encouraged. That's two eggs in a row, basically. The way I look at it, it's just two bombs in a row for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. It felt like a loss. I don't know about you guys. I was literally standing up, walking around my living room, like looking at the wall thinking, shit, am I going to break my hand punching this? Like, I was not in a good place.
Soft space to land?
Yeah, I was not in a good space. Like, when that play was dialed up and you saw the blitz coming in, I was already like, my head was in my hands. I was already done, you know?
Especially
you guys would have seen the size of the nachos that I made because I was just going to hate eat after that. But you know what? A whole baking sheet full of tortilla chips and cheese. It's terrible.
Yeah, I start normally that's like a general, you know, I have a 13-month-old, my wife and I here at the house, and there's generally a rule, like we all kind of know when the baby's napping and then we keep it tight. But then when Ruggs cradled in that sweet, sweet ball from Derek Carr, made it to the end zone, I screamed my ass off. The wife comes out from backyard, RJ, be quiet, baby. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. We pulled it off. Watch this replay. And especially Ruggs, who had a garbage day. I mean, that tip off of his hands for the interception, had a fumble. This goes back to, like, I hear so many Raider fans say, well, we gotta draw up plays just for Henry Ruggs. We gotta, like, no. Design plays. We gotta give it. No, fuck that. We have targets. We have Darren Waller. We have Josh Jacobs. We have Nelson Aguilar. We have other options. Like, the idea of, well, we got to put all that to side to make sure Ruggs gets his shots. No, let him earn his catches like everybody else on that offense.
The Carr, he does make his pre-snap reads, and sometimes it is going to take him away from the deep shots. But, I mean, if he's winning these battles off the line, if he's running the crisp routes and getting open, Carr's going to get him the ball. And he just needs to be better at it, just to get better, plain and simple.
You see what's crazy, man? I'm one of those Raider fans, RJ. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those Raider fans. When you draft a dude that high, I mean, why are you drafting him, right? Are we drafting him to be a decoy? Are we drafting him to be Darius Heyward Bey? We drafted him to be Jonathan Ross? No, man, we're drafting the number one wide receiver. Otherwise, we'd draft whoever the top sprinter in college football is each year. You know what I mean? Like, we're drafting a complete wide receiver that can catch, can run routes. You know, you can run jet sweeps. Like, we're basically drafted a Swiss Army knife, right?
Okay, you just triggered me. Not once against the Jets that I recall did he get that jet sweep handoff.
Not once, dude.
Like, what the
fuck?
And
it was open, yeah. Open all day long.
What the actual fuck? The DN, outside linebacker, if they have one over at the time, they're crashing every single fucking time, and not once did they give him the ball.
Yeah, there's a reason. There's got to be a reason behind that. I mean, and look, like, again, I'm not knocking the Ruggs pick, right? Like, he, okay, here's some facts, right? He's clearly underperforming in relation to the other, like, super hyped up wide receivers that came in this draft, right? You know, like Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, like, they're all playing better than him. That's fine. Like, okay, statistically, this season, he's not doing as well as his contemporaries. I still believe he was the right pick. I still think in the long term, he's right. I still buy what John Gruden is selling, how he blows the top off the offense and all these things. All I'm saying is every time we force the ball to Ruggs, that's one more play where we're not giving it to Jacobs, not giving it to Waller, not giving it to Renfro. Like, that's all I'm saying is this idea, like, oh, we gotta force, draw plays for him, put him in a position to succeed, do all those wonderful things, but don't just, like, make him the golden child and replace these, like, Pro Bowl dudes that we have on the offense.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, Aguilar needs to buy Ruggs a really nice Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Because he's not getting any over-the-top help, because the over-the-top help is going the other way. And to his credit, he's getting open. He's catching these balls. But, I mean, is that part of the offense? Are you going to – okay, it's like you're going to take away Ruggs? Fine, take away Ruggs. We got everybody else. But as soon as you don't take away Ruggs, what happened with 5 seconds left happened, right? So
dudes,
look at it that way as well.
What pissed me off, I said it to you guys in that text, what pissed me off was the very first play of the game. You rewatched that first play of the game, man. It was single high safety. You had Aguilar on the left side. You had Ruggs on the right side, both in man coverage playing press. And you watch the replay. Ruggs absolutely destroys the cornerback. Mm-hmm. I mean, separation right off, like, instantaneous. And he's got yards on this guy. And the safety help slides over to the left side of the field towards Aguilar's side. But because Carr has already made his mind up pre-snap where the ball's going, he doesn't even look that way. It was a house call. First play of the game, dude. And that's what we brought him in for. So it's, my argument is, if you're going to draft a guy like that, sure, you don't want to prioritize him. You don't want to give him the golden boy treatment, as you put it. But God damn it, man. Look his way. You know, like, you know what I'm saying?
At least keep an eye on him. I feel you. Like and one last thing on Ruggs in that final play. So they left in that very final play, right? They blitzed 8, went cover 0, just man-to-man. Derek Carr, issues the maximum protect, right call. The defense didn't get there. And they leave this guy named, not that Lamar Jackson, the other Lamar Jackson, the quarterback for the Jets, undrafted rookie to cover the fastest player arguably in the NFL. This is the description of Lamar Jackson on Wikipedia. When you look at his professional rankings, it says, in the 2020 NFL draft, Jackson went undrafted but signed with the New York Jets on May 6th. He was waived on September 5th and signed to the practice squad. He was elevated to the active roster on October 1st and October 10th for the team's week 4 and 5 games against the Denver Broncos and Arizona Cardinals, and reverted to the practice squad after each game. He was promoted to the active roster on October 13th. That's the dude that you put on Henry Ruggs with the game on the line to get your very first win of the NFL? Like, that's the description of the guy? Come on, man. That's ridiculous. Crazy. And one last point. You know where he's from? Elk Grove, California, just south of Sacramento. Maybe he's a secret Raider fan and just gave it away for us. I don't know. Something to think about. But the story of the game, obviously that was the story of the ending of the game, but Darren Waller just shattered all expectations of his already sky-high expectations. 200 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was targeted 17 times. The Jets didn't even bother trying to double team him, let alone triple team him. And he proved once again, he's just an absolute nightmare matchup wise.
You can't cover him with anything. You know, he's too fast for the linebackers and most safeties. He's too big for the corners and the safeties as well. He's just, he's a problem. I think that we should do a lot more. You know, Carr is so good pre-snap. I keep telling you guys, we gotta get everyone on one side, put Waller on the other, and get him a lot more one-on-one matchups. Look, we did on his long touchdown. He just shook 2 guys, and the last guy, I don't think he even touched him, and he just juked him. And he just needs to beat one guy, and he's got at least 15 yards on a quick hitch. So, not enough good things I can say about the guy.
You know what's mind blowing about Darren Waller to me, and it's not the drug story that every fucking announcer has to bring up every fucking game.
Right? God damn.
It's the fact that I can honestly say I don't think he's even come close to how good he could be. Like, when you look at the dude, it's not just the height, weight, speed. Like, the big part of his game last year that he had to fix was the drops. He had a couple of really just inopportune drops. I think the last play of the year, basically, it was a fourth down pitch and catch to him, and it just went straight through his hands. And he's kind of streaky like that. He does have those games where he'll have multiple drops in a game. But otherwise, is there a single weakness to his game? You know, his even his pass blocking, dude. Like, I wouldn't want him lined up on a defensive end in pass blocking assignments consistently. Why would you, right? That's taking away his greatest strength. But he's a complete player. And he's only really been doing it professionally and taking it seriously for a couple of years.
I think it's pretty obvious that there's the three best tight ends in football, right? You got George Kittle, you got Darren Waller, and the guy from the Chiefs that will be unspoken of. But when you look at, like, it's not just
the guy,
like,
that was on that reality show, that guy?
The guy that was on the reality show trying to find love on his journey, that guy. Yeah.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
That guy, you might have heard of him. But like, when you look at all, like, the skill sets of all three of those guys, like, not only are they the three best, but they're also 1, 2, and 3 in everything that matters. Like, I think Waller is the best route runner. I think Kittle's probably the best blocker. Like, they're not just like the three best, but they're just so heads and shoulders above everybody else and all the elements of being a good tight end. Neither one of them is ranked worse than third in all the assets of being a good tight end.
Yeah. I got a lot of shit last year for calling them top five. And the argument was Zach Ertz was number three. Mark Andrews was number four. And then, I don't know, man, like Jonnu Smith or whoever, you could rotate in guys at number five. I mean, he's a clear top three now. Clear top three. And then it's the chasing pack.
So the guy that gets the ball to all these guys, Derek Carr, I've been a very firm believer that we can win with him. Just our defense just needs to be like almost average, right? Like, I don't understand. I guess I understand why he gets so much heat from the greater media, like, you know, non-Raiders media and just general media, you know, out there. But, like, he threw for 70% accuracy last season, over 4,000 yards. He played at a Pro Bowl level for, you know, 10 or so games this season. Obviously, he looked absolutely atrocious versus the Falcons, maybe his worst game ever as a Raider. But he missed some bad shots on Sunday. I mean, some really, really awful ones. He was able to he has this way, guys, of always giving you the stats, but always reminding you, always pinpointing points of a game in your brain where you don't forget. Like, you don't forget those errors. Like, when he dove for that rushing touchdown, I just thought of all the times he fumbled into the end zone. It's like, those images can't get out of my brain, even though he got the win, he got the yards, he got the touchdowns. I just can't purge it from my memory.
And he keeps doing it. He keeps doing it. Like, somebody get him one of those hand grips, strengtheners. I don't know what his deal is, man. Even after he scored, we talked about it. We were texting each other. Even after he scored, he still dropped the ball as he's running up. You know, I don't have no words. I'm going to drink.
I'm going to say it. Even though that was an important touchdown, even though, what do you want your quarterback to do on a broken play? You want him to extend the play. I mean, if you looked at it from the perspective of, cool, we needed 6 points at that time and he got the job done, great. But that is a negative play in my book, 100%. Why?
Yeah.
Because he hasn't learned his lesson from the last two. He's the only guy in NFL history to have done that twice. And it is literally a step-by-step redo of the first two, where he scrambles to the right, he can see the defender bearing down on him, and he runs towards the pylon. He doesn't have the legs that he thinks he has. And to get the ball past the pylon, he extends it with his left hand, only the one hand. And again, as you said, Soto, he fumbled it like right after he broke the plane. But when you watch the replay, Foster Moreau is ridiculously wide open, and he is right in front of him the whole time. It didn't need to happen. It didn't need to come to that. And it's a negative play.
He's become a robot. Like, his pre-snap reads, like, you got to give him credit. His pre-snap reads are so good. He's so in tune with John Gruden in that offense and reading the defense that he's just like, okay, the defense right now says, I need to go to Waller on that out or Jacobs up the middle, whatever it may be. And as the play develops, he just doesn't deviate from that. He's just like, all right, nope, that's what the pre-snap read says, so that's what I'm going to do. And then when he tries to, you know, play a little jazz and do a little thing on his own, you just always cringe. You just, like, hold your breath every single time.
Yeah, man. If you watch that replay again, you also see the Jets defender. I forget the guy's name. He's the linebacker. But he was closing in on Carr pretty damn quick. And he decided to pull up at the last minute instead of hitting him like Jeff Heath did back when it was the Cowboys game, or Blake Martinez did with the Packers game. Yeah, I remember the players because it's literally seared in my brain how painful that shit was. Mm-hmm. The linebacker pulled up. If the linebacker hits him in the back again while his left hand's extended, he's doing that same shit and it's a touchback again. And that would have broken me, dudes. That legitimately would have broken me. That would have been it.
The good thing is any bad plays from Carr are completely overshadowed by the play of the defense and by the offensive line. Who played worse, our O-line or defensive unit?
Defensive unit by far. It's not even close.
Okay. Maybe just because I have high expectations for the – because really, like, our team's only going to go as far as our offensive line takes it. I really truly believe that.
Offensive line could not I say it's the offensive line. The offensive line – was just flat out bad. They were just flat out bad. And for this to be one of the talking points and one of the strengths and the highest paid and this and that and all this other stuff, and they're the biggest and the baddest and all this, nah, man, you couldn't move these guys around. And I mean, if the Jets do one thing well, it's against the run. But for to run the ball is poor. Mm-hmm. Booker's been doing well. He's been doing well when he had the chance, but it's just he had no shot the entire game.
All right, let's break down the O-line real quick. So, left tackle Colton Miller probably had the best game out of anyone on the unit. Like, that's a big storyline this year, is the fact that he legit looks like a bona fide Pro Bowl type player. He was not troubled once. Run and pass, legit. Denzel Good has been incredible. His move to left guard, incredible. But he was getting absolutely worked by Quinnen Williams all game long.
Yeah.
It was sad.
Well, I mean, you got to respect the kid. I think he was number three overall pick, but he'd been underperforming. Like, he played like a number three pick. He was super disruptive, run and pass.
He embarrassed Rodney Hudson like two or three times. Like, I can't remember any time this season where Rodney got like legit embarrassed one time in one play in one game. And Williams got a couple on him. Like, that is a goddamn badge of honor to get one over on Rodney.
Yeah, he's a baller. No doubt about it. I mean, Rodney Hudson. Like, so much is said about his relationship with Carr and calling out the protections. And honestly, dudes, I know Greg Williams is taking a lot of heat for the last play of the game, as he should. But he's definitely one of the most aggressive blitzers in the NFL in terms of defensive coordinators. And he brings every type of blitz. He brings everything. He brings every type of zone blitz you could imagine. So in terms of calling out the protections, a lot of the pressures that we saw were – very creative simulated pressures. The only guy that was really beaten the one-on-one consistently was Quinnen Williams. And then on the right side, Sam Young's a disaster. He's not the answer.
Greg Williams calls defenses the way I call defenses playing Madden in college. Just like all out blitz. If he was on offense, you never punt. You never do field goals. Like he video games his defense. And I guess that's why the Jets can't buy a win. So last thing on Derek Carr, he's now thrown an interception in three straight games. He had two interceptions in his first nine. So I think a lot of it has to do with the play of the offensive line, but also he's just missing a couple times as well. That interception wasn't his fault. Ruggs tipped it, et cetera. So let's go on to the defense, our defense. I think we got to dub Paul Gunther, our defensive coordinator, the quarterback whisperer, just for the other team, because – I can only imagine like the joy. Like when I was just looking up the stats of the Jets defense coming up, I was like, oh God, Carr's going to go nuts. It's going to be great. I'm like, oh, this is how every other team feels when they line up against the Raiders. No pass rush, defensive backs, all young. Like they're basically all first and second year players and expensive linebackers that here and there can overachieve, but generally have not produced what we're paying them.
Yeah. So, positive to take away. Cleveland Farrell, two sacks. Max Crosby was doing his thing. He was always around the. He was always around Darnold, making it happen. He may have seemed to regress a little bit against the run. Maybe he's, you know, trying to make too much happen. Rushing the passer. That's why he was. You know, they were running right at him, but most of the game. So we had these no name guys. Oh, they're going to give this guy a shot. They're going to give that guy a shot, and they ended up running, you know, 100 some odd yards against us. But it's a secondary for me, man. They were banged up. They were losing some guys, but you know, I mean, it's not even the young guys. Even Joyner was out of position a lot, and you know, missed some assignments. And it's just it seems to be a lot of people confused in the secondary.
I can get into this defense all day long, man. This is kind of one of the things that's really interesting about Max Crosby. If you watch him this year versus last year, one thing that's disappeared a little bit is his run lane discipline. Like, he's not prioritizing setting an edge. He's not really, you know, manning a specific gap. He's looking to penetrate, man. He's looking to get off the ball, Rod Marinelli style. It's all about penetration and getting off the snap, which is great if you're getting the sacks, you're getting the hits, you're getting the pressures. But if you're trailing in a game or you're playing a team like the Jets who just don't give a shit and they're going to run anyway, it just leaves big-ass holes. And we don't have the second level or the third level currently to be able to plug those types of gaps, man.
If he's the same type of boyfriend as he is defensive end, he's going to have like 8 kids. You're right, because he's like just fucking goes, right? Just hair on fire, finding that hole and going. And that's, I mean, honestly, like, you live and die by it, right? Like, that's who he is. Like, he's just going to go after the quarterback. He's going to miss some tackles. I think the two plays, because, like, as much as they want to blame Paul Gunther for everything, and as this podcast, you know, moves forward, we're talking about, like, what do we do about the defense? What do we do about the pass rush? But the personnel are making some pretty bad moves as well. Like, there are two plays on the defense where I'm like, Damon Arnett. Can someone tell Damon Arnett to stop leading with his brain on tackles? Concussions and back in the opening play last week and the second to first play on this week. And he's just like, oh, let me just dive head first into a fullback or my own linebacker. It's like, dude, you're a cornerback. Knock it off. And then even worse, like, this has to be the most embarrassing thing that happened to anybody that no one's talking about on Sunday. Jeff Heath, a safety, got de-cleated and trucked by Sam Darnold, a quarterback, and limped off the field. That's like getting dumped on Valentine's Day. Like, I hope he got eviscerated during tape study this week because he deserved it.
I'll take it a step further. That's getting dumped for the waiter on Valentine's Day.
When you're there with the ring to propose.
Laid on the field, writhing in pain. Hope you're okay, but goddamn, that looked bad.
I saw a crazy stat that we miss around 8 tackles a game on defense, mm-hmm. which when you hear that, it sounds like there's more missed tackles than 8 a game. I feel like sometimes we get 8 in a single fucking play. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you look at one thing consistently with Paul Gunther defenses that pisses me off more than anything, you can talk about a scheme all day. You can talk about personnel all day. It's just bad fucking fundamentals.
Yeah.
It's really bad fundamentals, man. We can't tackle. But we're communicating right up until the snap of the ball. Everyone's always a step behind because no one knows where the fuck to line up. And, dude, even if we just got better with tackling, think about the yards after catch that we'd spare ourselves, you know, on every single drive. It's crazy.
Well, moving forward, we did get the win. We walked away with a win. Whether you blow out the Broncos or barely squeak by the Jets, it all counts in the standings all the same. And then it's on to the next one. The Indianapolis Colts coming to town, Sunday game. Colts are 8-4. Opponents have a combined record of 64-79-1, have had a pretty easy schedule. They're the only team that have lost to the Jaguars this entire season. But the way they're running the ball looks good. The way their defense is playing is all right. They haven't been able to, like, beat really good teams, really. They're 1-1 with the Titans. But they've got a big record, and this is massive when it comes to tiebreakers in the AFC wildcard race.
Got to have it.
Mm-hmm. They actually beat the Packers, which I think is their best win. But overall, it's been mostly shitty component, shitty opponents.
They're opportunistic, man. They have what, three pick sixes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're opportunistic this year. They don't. Their defense is ranked up there. They're ranked up there. They're, I mean, I think top five total defense in the league. And you don't think about it, but that's what they do. They get there and they're opportunistic. They get the ball. They turn the ball over. They force nine fumbles, recovered six of those. They have 13 picks and three pick sixes. I mean, they turn the ball over. They give themselves short fields. When Rivers not giving it right back, I mean, he's able to hit guys when he has time. And, you know, that's what we need to make sure. We don't turn the ball over against these guys. That's the one thing I said before the Falcons game. Don't leave them short fields. They don't have Julio. They don't have Gurley. Just make them drive the ball all the way down the field. That's the same thing we got to do with the Colts. Don't give them any short fields. Make it more plays for Rivers. The more plays you give Rivers, the more chance you're going to get to steal one from them.
It's true.
I'm just not afraid of Philip Rivers at all. Maybe it's just like the last couple seasons when he was on the Chargers, and I just have no fear of him. Like, I just imagining him just like standing like a statue in that pocket, like physically unable to take like one step left and either getting sacked or throwing picks. Like, I as bad as our defense is, I think we get like four sacks on Sunday. I think we get a couple interceptions. I just have no fear of Philip Rivers. None at all.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. He's there's few people in the NFL that I hate more than Philip Rivers. I just think the guy's a bitch, straight up. He's good for a couple things. He's good for bitching at his offensive lineman. He's good for popping out kids. And he's good for trash talking when he has no right to be trash talking. That's all that motherfucker's good for. But if you look at the Colts, I mean, Rivers is what Rivers is. He's the same guy. He's got the same arm that he did last year with the Chargers. He's not going to be making any of those high difficulty type throws, pushing the ball downfield. He's going to be the guy that takes what your defense gives you. And as you guys know, Paul Gunther's defense gives fucking Christmas presents to every team that we face every single week. Wide open zones. It's uncontested catches. It's the basics, right? It's the, you know, he's going to be sitting there watching film study this week saying, all right, cool. I just saw what Sam Darnold did to this defense. It's really basic shit, right? It's knowing the rules that the Raiders defense plays to and then knowing where the soft spots are going to be, which T.Y. Hilton, he's going to feast. I mean, if anyone's got T.Y. Hilton in the fantasy team, load up. I'm not as worried about Hines. I'm not as worried about their run game as much. I think, obviously, it's kind of crazy to say that after just giving up what we gave up to the Jets.
6.1 yards a carry against the New York freaking Jets.
It's because we were trying to get after the passer. I like what we did against the Saints week three against Kamara. You know, when you're looking at screen teams, you're looking at teams that look to get the running backs the ball. That was the main threat. I don't know if we're the same team as we were week three. I'm a little worried that we're replicating what we did last year and we start this kind of this rut. But I feel pretty good about defending the running backs in the passing game. What I don't feel good about is their tight ends, and I definitely don't feel good about T.Y. Hilton.
Here's the thing about Philip Rivers. Everything you said about Philip Rivers is right. He's similar to Carr in one respect. His pre-snap reads. He knows where he wants to go with the ball. But the big difference is, if you fuck up, he's gonna make you pay for that fuck up, right? He's not gonna miss an open guy down the field. And if we do that, Phillips is gonna find him.
And we're gonna leave him. I mean, that's gonna happen. I just see him slinging the ball, like whether that he's open or not, whether his like Hilton or whoever is like wide open or double covered. He's going to do what you said. He's going to put the ball there and we're going to get some interceptions. The good news is there's a good chance that Jonathan Abrams is going to return. I think we really missed him in the run, you know, in the running game more than anything, oh God, defending Jesus. The run. Damon Arnett.
Jonathan, Jesus.
Yep.
It is Jonathan Abrams.
Jonathan Abrams. I want two of them. That's why. Trent Brown, Josh Jacobs also may come back as well. It's looking pretty good that all three of those guys are going to be back, maybe even Damon Arnette as well. And we're going to need him down the stretch. Like, I keep, all season long, I've just been like, oh, right, when once we're healthy, like, just imagine how good we're going to be. Trent Brown will be back next week. You know, like, and we just keep getting worse. Like, Richie Incognito, we thought every like, couple weeks we thought he'd be back. He's on IR. Obviously, you know, Terrell Williams out for the season without playing a single snap. Damon Arnette just can't, you know, can't play football without rattling his brain cells. It's just like, that's what's going to be scary. If at some point in the next couple weeks, and if the Raiders get enough wins to stay alive, if we get to week like 16, 17 and just boom, we're all of a sudden totally healthy, we're going to catch a lot of teams by surprise. Like, the my buddy Jimmy Smith that I work with at SiriusXM, diehard Steelers fan, and he was, you know, and he was talking trash, you know, when it looked like the Jets were going to lose. He was texting me, and I said, hey, you better pray the Raiders make it to the playoffs, because we're the last team the Chiefs want to play. He's like, oh yeah, I completely agree with you. That's the weird thing about the Chiefs. They'll, like, honestly, the Super Bowl this year will probably be Chiefs Saints. That's probably who it's going to be. Raiders beat both, but we needed a last second Greg Williams moron defensive play call to beat the Jets. Like, that's just how bipolar the Raiders are.
And that's why I'm bald.
That's because you never get laid.
That's true too.
So when you look at like the playoff scheme, right? Raiders have what left? Indy, Chargers, Miami, Denver. We're going to be underdogs in two of them. We're going to be favorites in two of them. If we can go 3-1 to finish the season, that'll put us at 10-6, probably in the playoffs, because we'll have the tiebreaker over the Browns, hopefully the tiebreaker over the Colts or the Dolphins. But this is the other problem. The Titans have a cake schedule. Jacksonville, Detroit, Green Bay, Houston. Miami's schedule, a little tougher. KC, New England, us, Bills, and Indy, Las Vegas, Houston, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville. A lot of these schedules get really cake for a lot of guys in the wild card race.
You know, you got Green Bay and you got Houston. If you're the Titans finishing up the year, I wouldn't call those games cake. I agree with the 3-1. If we can go 3-1, but it has to be the right 3-1. We gotta beat the Colts and you gotta beat Miami. Cause I honestly don't see 10-6 with a loss to one of them. I think the other one is gonna boot us out.
Yeah, those are big games, man. Those are they're almost double wins, right? Because it's a loss for them. It's a win for us. It's a fucking 2-point swing. I mean, what's crazy, guys, is if you look at these teams that are still in it, who do you honestly think is the best team? Like, it's not Cleveland. We know that. Indianapolis, we know it's not them. It's either us, Tennessee, or the Dolphins. And I think it's hard to make the case for the Dolphins. They've got a rookie quarterback. It's not the most talented roster in the world. They're playing some damn good ball. Like, the defense is falling out too. Yeah, I mean, they got a running game. They got a defense, right? But, I mean, the Titans are damn good. They're pretty stacked top to bottom. They got an experienced quarterback. They got a running game. They got a banging O-line.
They got a couple of beasts at receiver too. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, they're stacked, right? And they've got a coach who's been there, done it before. Besides them, though, I mean, the Raiders control their own destiny. We literally control our own destiny. So if we don't make it in, it's because we've capitulated again, you know?
Well, it's going to be a fun end of the season. We picked the right time to start this podcast, guys. Got the momentum from the Jets. Big one against the Colts coming up. All right, guys. Last word from each of you before we close it out. Rory?
I mean, I want to get into the long-term shit, man. I want to talk about Carr. I want to talk about who we're replacing Gunther with, you know? Like, I don't know, man. I'm still not sold on Carr. I hate his little videos that he does. You know, the little interviews that he does where he's
just trying to give back to the fans. What do you hate about the Carr talk? Other than the stupid name.
The interview that he just did where he's like bemoaning fans for not enjoying the win. I'm like, motherfucker. the winless Jets, it felt like a loss. He's got to be more – he's just tone deaf. Like, no one wants to hear that, dude. We want to see you go out and actually take care of business and not talk to the – you know, talk a big game to interviewers. I mean, his stats were incredible. I give him a lot of respect for – when you go back and rewatch the Jets game, you realize how much pressure he was under at all times. Like, I was eating his lunch because he was missing throws when he wasn't under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't looking at how often he was actually making pretty clutch throws when he was under a ton of pressure. And that's – I've given him shit for being a bitch in the past after his injury. I think he's officially over that. Like, there was free rushes coming straight at him, and he was standing strong in the pocket and delivering strikes. There was a couple of big third down conversions where, like, high-difficulty throws, and he had a rusher that he knew he was about to get hit. But, I mean, we're going to see, man. Between now and the playoffs, last year, same thing happened. He started hot, and then down the stretch, he was – you know, he's the quarterback of a completely dysfunctional offense that couldn't move the ball against some of the worst teams. That's what happened last year. I'm hoping after playing the Falcons and the Jets and putting up two burgers, the rest of the year he's coming back strong and playing like he has for the first 10 games of the year.
Yeah, I agree. This is where you separate yourself from just a guy to the guy, right? Your team needs you. They need these W's. Go out there, do what you got to do, right? Take care of business. Take care of the fucking football, right? Treat that freaking thing with respect. Find the right guys. Make the plays. Make the extra plays. Make the big plays. Make the plays that the guy makes, not just a guy, right? You got to be that guy on this offense. He has to be that guy on this offense. And I want to talk about one thing that we haven't even touched on. What the fuck? The NFL knew that Dez Bryant needed to
here comes
that morning they knew he needed to retest, and they didn't bother telling anyone until he was hugging everybody and kissing everybody on the field without a mask on. Like, what the fuck, NFL?
Hey, you know the NFL is gonna fine Baltimore. You know they're gonna take a draft pick away. They're gonna be very fair, very level-headed. They would never in a million years put a punishment on the Raiders that they want to equally distribute to other people who are sinful in the same way. Come on. It's Roger Goodell. Just the pinnacle of righteousness. You guys know this, right?
Got me triggered again.
Is the sarcasm too quick?
You got me triggered again.
All right, we're going to get out of here before Rory puts a Coors Light through the wall in his garage. All I care about is that whatever Darren Waller had for breakfast on Sunday, he has it again this next Sunday and the morning of every game moving forward. That was a beautiful thing. Boys, one down, 1,000 more to go. We're going to start doing these every single Wednesday, hopefully some post-game stuff. We're going to have some interviews in the future. We're going to have a lot of fun here with the Autumn Windbags.
Let's do it, baby.
I'm ready. Come on.
If you like what you heard on the Autumn Windbags podcast, go ahead and subscribe. We're here for the long haul, baby.